This Family Life News Podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you.
It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. The protests rage on. From coast to coast, campus to campus, anti-Israel unrest continues. Demonstrators at Columbia University have until the end of the week to remove their campus encampment. Former Vice President Mike Pence says this isn't free speech, it's hate speech.
These are not simply protests about a political issue. These are pro-terrorist mobs.
Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton blames outside agitators for riling up the mobs.
Finding out where the funding is coming from and who's generating them. Again, they don't look just spontaneous to me when they're sitting out there in $500 camping tents.
Correspondent Steve Harrigan has more at a recent pro-Palestinian protest on the campus of NYU.
We just walked through the crowd a short time ago, and they were singing from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's basically a call for the destruction of the state of Israel, and to hear that being sung here in the heart of New York at a great university, it's really stunning.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich.
We do not want to run a risk of the gradual rise of essentially a Nazi-like anti-Jewish movement. And that's what it is.
The current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is visiting with Jewish students at Columbia today, and he'll be hosting a press conference later this afternoon on the rise of anti-Semitism. Late last night, the U.S. Senate green-lighted a $95 billion foreign aid bill to help Ukraine and Israel in their wars with Russia and Hamas. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The Senate sends a unified message to the entire world. America will always defend democracy in its hour of need.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz was one of 18 senators to vote no on the war aid package.
I can't support this bill ultimately because it gives money to Gaza, it gives money for the NGOs that are trafficking illegal immigrants, and it does nothing, zero, to stop the invasion at our southern border. That's got to be our priority.
The spending plan includes a provision that forces the social media app TikTok to divorce itself from China or be outlawed. FBI Director Christopher Wray.
TikTok, for us, represents a national security concern. And the reason I say that is that TikTok's parent company is beholden to the Chinese government.
170 million Americans use TikTok on a daily basis. Correspondent Scott McFarland continues our coverage on Capitol Hill.
In a Congress that seemingly can't agree on anything, this passed with overwhelming bipartisan support amid concerns China could use TikTok to exploit and access private Americans' information. One lawmaker called it a spy balloon in your phone. Another said it's a possible tool for propaganda.
President Biden will sign the spending package and new TikTok rules later today. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a case today that will determine when doctors can perform abortions in states that have enacted bans since the overturn of Roe.
If the Supreme Court rules with the Biden administration, that would tell all hospitals across the country that you have to provide abortions.
John Segoe with Idaho Right to Life says he's not surprised that the White House would challenge his state's new pro-life law.
States have this covered. We have definitions of medical emergencies. And instead of working with the states, the Biden administration just threatened hospitals directly.
At issue is Idaho's Defense of Life Act, which prohibits abortions except for cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. Pro-lifers argue the percentage of abortions that are necessary in those instances is next to nil. New rules in schools when it comes to the food served in the school cafeteria. Willie James Inman reports from Washington.
Less less sugar and sodium and more healthy options is the goal with new standards rolled out by the Department of Agriculture today for school meals across the country. The new rule would mean schools should prioritize more whole grains, fruits, and vegetables. Some 30 million children depend on school meals, and Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says the effort will make it easier for schools to access locally sourced products.
The new school lunch standards also include limits on added sugar in cereal, yogurt, and flavored milk. Controversial bill allowing Tennessee teachers to carry guns in the classroom now headed to the governor's desk, Republican Representative Brock Martin.
I trust my local law enforcement. I trust my director of schools. I trust my teacher. If they believe this is what's right for that specific community and it's permissive and they think that's going to help take care of my child, I fully support this bill.
Critics say teachers should not be in a position of acting as law enforcement officers. The bill was inspired in part by last year's mass shooting at a Christian school in Nashville. New flight delay rules are in effect. Aviation consultant Chris Van Cleve says it's a shot across the bow for the airline industry.
These new Department of Transportation rules that will be going into effect say you can get a refund for a canceled flight. If you're delayed more than 3 hours for a domestic flight or more than 6 hours internationally, you can also get a refund if you choose not to fly. Also, bag fees must be refunded if a checked bag is significantly delayed, and refunds must be given if any services you paid for aren't provided, like broken Wi-Fi.
There are signs of life again from Voyager 1, that spacecraft that left planet Earth in 1977.
And we have liftoff.
We're on a journey to the edge of the bubble the sun creates around itself. Outside is interstellar space.
Lead scientist Ed Stone. In November, Voyager 1 stopped sending information back to NASA, but after a computer chip fix, it's back in business. The space probe is currently 15 billion miles from us. It's the farthest distance any man-made object has ever traveled. Still to come on the Noon Report for Wednesday, eclipse impact on local economy. It's Sunday in Pennsylvania, and twins rule at school.
Good afternoon. This is Kevin Williams. As they say, what a difference a day makes. Temps in the 60s yesterday, 30s and 40s in many areas today. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin, we will see you then. In the meantime, let's check the stories making news where you live, all across New York and Pennsylvania. President Biden and former President Trump both won their respective primaries in Pennsylvania nominating contests last night. Voters did, however, send a strong message to Mr. Biden. Nearly 50,000 uncommitted write-in ballots were cast to protest the president's handling of the Israel-Hamas war, and that is twice the number from 4 years ago. In Pennsylvania's statewide row office races, former two-term Auditor General Eugene DePasquale beat four other Democrats to win the nomination for Attorney General. He'll take on Republican Dave Sunday, who got 70% of the vote in the GOP nomination.
I campaigned all throughout Pennsylvania. I mean, I drove to almost every single county, spoke everywhere, and it was an amazing experience because it put me in a position to really listen to what people are concerned about.
Sunday is the current DA of York County and says restoring the public's faith in the criminal justice system is his top priority.
We need accountability and redemption in our criminal justice system. We have to hold people accountable. If communities aren't safe, then nothing else matters.
Democrats have held the state's AG post, the top prosecutorial position in PA, since 2008. The current AG, Michelle Henry, not seeking re-election. Meantime, in the race for state treasurer, Allegheny County Democrat Aaron McClelland upset Erie County Representative Ryan Bizarro. She'll go on to face incumbent Republican Stacey Garrity in November in an all-female general election. President Biden makes his second trip to central New York in as many years tomorrow. He'll be in Syracuse on Thursday announcing a new $6 billion federal grant for Micron, the computer chip maker setting up shop just north of the Salt City in the town of Clay. New York police say enough is enough when it comes to attacks on law enforcement officers.
It is time to end what has become the open season on police officers across New York State.
Delaware County Sheriff Craig DeMond.
Those who knowingly target police officers are obviously not being deterred by the potential penalties.
In just the past few weeks, four separate shootings have left three cops dead in the Empire State. A sheriff's deputy and Syracuse police officer killed while being ambushed at a home. An Albany cop had his femur shattered after being shot during a traffic stop. And in New York City, a police officer there was shot and killed during a traffic stop last month.
An attack on a police officer is an attack on civilization. It is a form of terrorism.
3 weeks ago, a Chemung County sheriff's deputy was critically injured during a hit and run at a Target store in Big Flats, New York. Three people are dead after a single car crash in Athens, Pennsylvania, early yesterday, just over the border from New York. Police say the accident happened around 2:30 in the morning on Riverside Drive. A sedan traveling at a high rate of speed lost control, left the highway, and hit a parked truck. Crystal Chapman lives nearby.
This road, which is 40 mile an hour, nobody goes 40 mile an hour on this road, and there's a very bad hump up the road, and I believe the driver of that car hit that hump, lost control.
All three adults inside the car died as a result of that crash in Athens, Pennsylvania. It's been a couple weeks since the total solar eclipse plunged western New York into nighttime darkness during the middle of the day. As it turns out, those 3.5 minutes paid off big time. According to officials, the eclipse brought in almost $15 million to the local economy. Patrick Kaler, president of Visit Buffalo Niagara, says had it not been a cloudy day, the region would have cashed in even more.
When we realized that we were not going to have a clear, sunshiny day, many of our hotel guests were canceling their reservations, and we've heard from several of our hotels that they lost anywhere from 10 to 15% of their reservations for that Sunday and Monday night.
Still, $14.7 million, not too shabby. The next big event expected to bring in as many tourist dollars to Western New York will be the 2026 NCAA Men's College Basketball Tournament at the KeyBank Center in downtown Buffalo. New York residents lead the charge in keeping their landlines. Jacqueline Carl has this report.
A new survey by the Chamber of Commerce shows New York State leads the country in percentage of landline phones, with the National Center of Health Statistics reporting that over 52% of New Yorkers say they still own a fixed line phone. New Jersey is a close second because, as the study concluded, the population in these states is a bit older than in the rest of the country, and seniors are the most likely to still keep a landline phone in their homes. Jacqueline Carl, New York.
A Pennsylvania high school has the world seeing double. Here's Family Life's Brian Querrey.
About 3 out of every 100 births results in twins, and even though it's a rare thing, this year's graduation at Pennsylvania's Norwin High School will see 11 sets of twins receive their diplomas. Some of the twins are identical, some fraternal. And many of them say twin life at the school, located in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, is special. One senior didn't even realize how many twins there were.
I don't really realize as much that there's so many of us until we all got down in the office and I was like, oh my gosh, there's literally 22 of us.
And while the twins have a lot in common, they have different passions involved in everything from music to sports and vo-tech. One twin said graduation will be bittersweet.
I think we all can relate that when we're going to go to college, it's just going to be hard because we just like live together constantly and we've grown up and seen each other for the whole years.
Congratulations to these literal dynamic duos. Brian Querrey, Family Life News.
Must be something in the water, as they say. Thank you, Brian. You're listening to the Noon Report, a Wednesday edition on the Family Life Radio Network. Check in sports next. The NBA playoffs continued last night. 3 games on tap. The Minnesota Timberwolves put together a dominant performance over the Phoenix Suns at the Target Center. Jaden McDaniels led the way with 25 points. The Wolves up 2-0 in that series. In the East, the Indiana Pacers even their series with the Milwaukee Bucks. And out west, the Dallas Mavericks down the LA Clippers. Game 2 of their best-of-7 series. Luka Doncic poured in 32, helping the Mavs even the the series at a game apiece. In the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Panthers slip by the Lightning 3-2 in overtime. They earn a 2-0 series lead, and the New York Rangers edging the Capitals 4-3. They're up 2-0 as well. Out west, the Colorado Avalanche took down the Jets 5-2. That series even at a game apiece, and the Predators edged the Canucks 4-1. That series also tied 1 game each. Indiana Fever guard Caitlin Clark has just signed an 8-year, $28 million deal with Nike. It is the richest sponsorship package ever for a woman's hoop star. And in men's college basketball, former Purdue Boilermaker Zach Edey will enter the draft in June. The Canadian led the nation in scoring this year and also led his team to the national title game. On the diamond, the New York Yankees scored a one-run win over the Oakland Athletics at home, 4-3 your final. Marcus Stroman picking up his second victory of the season after striking out 9 over 5 1/3 innings. The Pittsburgh Pirates beat the Milwaukee Brewers 2-1. Connor Joe signaling home Brian Reynolds in the 6th inning, which proved to be the game-winning run. And Philadelphia had its 7-game win streak snapped last night. The Phillies fall to the Cincinnati Reds 8-1. The Mets lose again to the Giants 5-1, your final. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. And still to come on the Noon Report for a Wednesday, done deal on Capitol Hill, campus crackdown, and the legend in the lake.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. Recently, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a law to prevent children younger than 14 from having social media accounts. Now, Florida's not the first state to attempt to restrict use of social media by minors. About a year ago, Utah also passed a law that would require parental consent for minors to have social media accounts and would require social media platforms to allow parents to see the posts and messages put by their children. Now, supporters of these laws will point to the countless documented ways that social media and digital technologies harm teenagers. On the other side are those concerned, rightfully so, that these would be laws that would enable government encroachment on personal freedom and would lead to increased surveillance and intervention by the state. Not to mention, isn't it the parents who should manage how children use smartphones and social media, not the state? Well, of course, they should be. But for the most part, it's not happening. First, social media platforms fail to provide the necessary tools for parents to help protect their children. As mother of five and CEO of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, Dawn Hawkins has noted, quote, "The parental controls do not work. They've designed these platforms without parents in mind. For example, there are over 32 steps required on Apple devices for parents to set up parental controls. And even those Chromebooks that are distributed in schools, they also come with minimal settings and parental controls. And apparently, it's far too easy for overwhelmed parents to just skip these steps. And far too many of them do skip them, failing to realize just how much is at stake when it comes to their child's health and well-being. Still, as Jonathan Haidt has argued, even if parents had the tools that they really needed, this is not just a problem of what their children see online. Quote, "Content moderation is to some extent a red herring, a distraction from larger issues. Yet it must be done and done better. But even if these platforms could someday remove 95% of harmful content, the platforms would still be harmful to kids. In other words, there's danger in the medium, not just the message. For example, even Meta's so-called industry-leading efforts to make social media platforms safer for kids, they're all aimed at keeping kids on their platforms, on their screens, not off of them. In recent years, there have been local congregations and groups of Christian families that have joined together and taken what's called the Postman Pledge. By taking the pledge, which is named after tech critic Neil Postman, families agree to a whole year of raising their kids without smartphones or social media in community with one another. And the results have been pretty remarkable. And now more than ever, we need that kind of collective action. If we're going to protect our kids from phone-based childhood, the more we see it, the better. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. Today's Breakpoint was co-authored by Jared Hayden. And for more resources like this one, go to breakpoint.org.
All right, thank you, John. That time of the broadcast where we say hello, Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Much chillier than this time yesterday. Clouds, intervals of sunshine, a couple of scattered showers, even a few wet flakes or a bit of grapple in places. Temperatures after dipping midday into the 30s and 40s will hold steady or rise a bit this afternoon. Then tumble tonight as skies clear into the 20s and low 30s with areas of frost. Sunny tomorrow, comfortably cool, high temps, low 50s. Milder and sunny Friday, high temps then, low 60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Lots going on Wednesday, the 24th of April. Anti-Israel protests have continued for many days now on the campus of Columbia University, but there is a clock on the civil unrest. They are under orders to dismantle the campus encampment. If they don't, the National Guard will do it for them.
People who peacefully protest, they're not throwing bottles and chairs.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams.
We can't have outside agitators come in and be destructive to our city.
From coast to coast, campus to campus, these pro-Palestinian protests are growing louder and more menacing.
University students are saying, we are Hamas. I cannot feel safe to be on campus when this is the case, but unfortunately, after the past 6 months and the rhetoric on campus, it doesn't surprise me.
That Jewish student at Columbia says she will not return until the demonstrations die off. Nancy Chen continues our coverage.
Outside of Columbia University's campus, demonstrators continue to rally after the school's administration warned students on campus to dismantle their camps or face consequences. Some are seen breaking them down, while others remain defiant.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is visiting with Jewish students today at Columbia and will hold a press conference later this afternoon. The U.S. Senate has approved a $95 billion war aid package for our allies in Europe and the Middle East. Most of the money goes to Ukraine, but a lot of it's earmarked for Israel as well. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the bill sends an important message.
We tell our allies, we will stand with you. We tell our adversaries, don't mess with us. We tell the world, we will do everything to defend democracy and our way of life.
There is no money, however, for U.S. border security, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says Republicans should have never agreed to that.
They basically just surrendered on the border. They now have no leverage to do anything on the border.
The bill also forces the social media app TikTok to divorce itself from China or be outlawed in these United States. Correspondent Ryan Noble says that won't happen, though, without a fight.
We expect to see a massive legal battle between TikTok and the federal government, pitting the First Amendment versus national security. And TikTok has cited free speech as part of their argument, and they've had some success in court.
Brad Huddleston is a pastor, author, and expert on social media addiction. He says TikTok should be banned.
TikTok is the number one platform for the propagation of LGBTQ activism and ideology, which in this country and many countries of the world, children are having the surgeries, the hormone treatments, replacements, and all of that sort of thing that we're grappling with the public schools and the curriculum. Yeah. TikTok by far is the number one platform that propagates that. So that alone worries me.
TikTok's also fueling much of the anti-Israel protests that are happening right now on U.S. college campuses. The abortion issue back before the U.S. Supreme Court. The justices today hearing arguments on a law out of Idaho that bans abortions except for cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother. At issue is whether emergency rooms can provide abortions to women close to death. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
The conflict is between Idaho's law and a federal law called the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act that requires hospitals who receive Medicare funding to actually provide necessary stabilizing treatment to pregnant women in cases of emergency.
Pro-lifers argue such cases of emergency are extremely rare. Tennessee teachers could soon be able to carry concealed handguns in the classroom. The legislation passed the state legislature yesterday. It was inspired in part by last year's mass shooting at a Christian school in Nashville. In Louisiana, sex offenders can be sentenced to court-ordered castration. 54-year-old child predator there is set to have the surgery upon his release. Assistant District Attorney Brad Cascio is all for it.
This is one of those tools in a prosecutor's toolbox, and if I have the opportunity to do it, and I think that it's just and that the crime calls for it, I'm going to try my best to use it.
Lawmakers in Louisiana are constructing legislation that could expand the use of castration for convicted child abusers. New survey from Bankrate.com suggests high prices are putting the dream of owning a home out of reach for most Americans. That poll shows more than half of us, U.S., do not make enough money to buy a home. According to the FDA, the bird flu virus has just been detected in samples of pasteurized milk. That agency making the announcement less than a month after an outbreak of the bird flu was found in herds of dairy cows for the very first time. Some music history is up for sale.
After 50 years in an attic.
Help me if you can, I'm feeling down.
A guitar played by John Lennon on Help and by George Harrison in the Beatles' song Norwegian Wood is going up for auction. The auction house says it's like finding a lost Rembrandt or Picasso in the 12-string Hootenanny acoustic. Still plays like a dream.
Steve Kaffin with that report. And with so much hate in the world today, it would be nice if we could all just get along. Next at noon, some tips for fostering friendships. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
There's something special about longtime friendship. I'm Martha Menikas Foster, and this is Family Life's Inside Out, where we look at how God transforms his people from the inside out. Today, I'm talking about lasting friendship and what can get in its way with photographer, marriage coach, and author Dorothy Greco. Her books include Marriage in the Middle and Making Marriage Beautiful. So Dorothy, what is it about knowing someone over many years and being known that long that makes a friendship different from a new friendship?
Intimacy, trust, and vulnerability, which at least to me are all really important factors in friendships, take time, like years. And that's not to say that you can't go deep quickly with someone that you've recently met, but I think having friends for a long time, and I'm talking about like decades, is qualitatively different. Because when somebody knows us and knows our limitations and maybe even has been hurt by us, but nevertheless continues to love us and want to spend time with us, there's something in that that it's deeply healing, but also very moving. And I think probably most of us could recount seasons in our lives where friends just really come alongside of us and give us what we need in order to make it through day to day.
So how, Dorothy, how have you seen God use these established longtime friendships in ways that might be less likely in a newer friendship?
Hopefully, we all have at least a few friends that we allow to speak truth to us or to challenge us if they notice that something's amiss. So I don't think that I would do great if somebody I just met, you know, came up to me and said, hey, I noticed that, you know, sometimes you can be a little sarcastic when you're talking to this person. And what's that about? Which is true of me. I can use sarcasm when I'm angry.
What do you think works against us maintaining long friendships?
There's a lot of things. I mean, you know, just look at the political situation today, how divided we are and how quickly we judge people who don't see things like we see things. So I think that that's one. Probably the second, and maybe this is even more important, is that we don't really like to admit that we're needy. But the reality is that's how God designed us. Like, no, we actually are needy, and the neediness is by design because it draws us deeper into relationship with God and with others. So, yeah, the polarization, the refusal to admit that we're needy, and then probably the failure to prioritize relationships because it can seem like there's so many other things that are much more urgent than that. We have to make time and space for these relationships to happen. And if we don't, then friendships can suffer.
I mean, given the challenges to keeping up with friendships, why might doing that work, because it is work sometimes, why might doing the work to maintain them be worth it?
Harvard University did a long-term study a few years back. What it showed was that loneliness had the equivalent of smoking more than a pack of cigarettes every day.
Remarkable.
On somebody's long-term health, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. Right? And one of the quotes from the study said that, I may mangle this a little bit, but the people who were the most satisfied in their relationships when they were in their 50s were the healthiest when they were in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's clearly something about spending time with other people that really brings us into a place of greater health.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if we are people of faith, the Trinity mirrors to us what relationship, what deep, profound, lasting relationship is meant to look like.
Uh-huh.
I think that it's part of our DNA that God created us in such a way that we would be in relationship, first and foremost with Him, but then also with the people that He puts in our lives. And that allows us to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches us how to love. It teaches us how to forgive. So there's mm-hmm. something about that forging deeper into friendship that I think allows us to grow up and to grow into people who are more like Jesus. And at least for me, like, that's what it's all about.
So long-term friendships are worthwhile, but there's lots of reasons why they might not survive. Have you found, Dorothy, have you found practical ways that keep established friendships growing?
Showing up is really, really important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Showing up for those milestone events that people, their baby's getting christened, or they're having an engagement party, or somebody's father died. So us being present, saying, we value you more than whatever else it is that we could do in that time, not backing away from conflict, those moments when differences surface, all of us pretty much have the tendency to just kind of withdraw. But rather than using that as an excuse to pull back, is saying, well, this could allow us to go deeper with each other. So not backing away from conflict, showing up,
mm-hmm.
and then just taking risks. Choosing to say, this person, I really like the conversations we've had. I'm going to take a risk with them and be a little bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And seeing how the person reacts and then using that as an opportunity to go deeper.
That is author and marriage coach Dorothy Greco. And this is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, on the weather map, we're tracking the cold front that brought the rain overnight and is now pushing east of the area. And this front, you're ushering in some pretty chilly air. That'll be with us the next 36 to 48 hours, resulting in frost tonight. But we do expect a warm-up as we head toward the weekend, and quite the warm-up as we head into early next week. For this afternoon, though, much chillier than this time yesterday. Clouds, intervals of sunshine, a couple of scattered showers, even a few wet flakes or a bit of grapple in places. Temperatures after dipping midday into the 30s and 40s will hold steady or rise a bit this afternoon. And then tumble tonight as skies clear into the 20s and low 30s with areas of frost. Sunny tomorrow, comfortably cool, high temps, low 50s. Milder and sunny Friday, high temps then, low 60s.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin Williams. And finally, from us at noon today, the legend in the lake, the so-called Loch Ness Monster, making headlines again just when you thought we'd solve that one. There's a renewed search for the mystical Scottish creature, and Bree Tennis tells us how the U.S. is helping out.
NASA says they'll join in with the latest search for the Loch Ness Monster. Last year, one of the biggest searches for Nessie captured loud underwater noises and several potential sightings, but nothing scientific. This latest search will take place on the 90th anniversary of the first photo of Nessie, which has been proven to be a fake. But there have been nearly 1,300 sightings of Nessie since that photo was released. The new search is May 30th to June 2nd. I'm Bree Tennis.
All right, let's hope they find something. Thank you very much, Bree. And that's the world we live in, Wednesday, April 24th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Family Life News podcast. If you've been encouraged by what you've heard, please share it with others and click the subscribe button to automatically receive future episodes. Family Life is a listener-supported ministry. Podcasts like this are made possible by your financial partnership. Find out more at familylife.org.